if there's one person who knows every "if you know, you know" brand, it's Nico Lazzaro. For most folks, he's the source of new trends, ideas, and has been experimenting with his look for ages. But before that, yes, like all of us, he was making business cards for his Tumblr. Hello, Vistaprint! Eventually making his way as an early employee at Grailed, but his career along the way was shocking, but unfortunately more common than we all realize. Nico has always been a member of the Slack, popping in to drop knowledge bombs here and there, and I'm pleased to say Rob convinced him to come hang. So Rob, Nico, and I chat how he found his way into the whistleblower fashion site Diet Prada, working at Grailed, what brands he's been into, and the superpower of being a nerd online. Grab a turkey leg! It's Blammo Extra, baby! Thanks so much for joining.
It's my pleasure, you know? Longtime fan, obviously. Member of the Slack group. It's great to, like, I don't know. I mean, we've been, like, we've known each other for over 10 years now.
At least, yeah. Because I was going to say, I first met you, and, you know, when you were, like, the Bengal stripe.
Yeah, I met you and Lawrence, Antonio.
You were the Vistaprint card.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I got like, I don't know how many thousands of cards, and I was just like, you know, handing them out willy-nilly, but I don't know if anyone actually held on to those.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like those are like, someday those will go in like the hall of lore of menswear stuff as every blogger's previous, you know, business card for Capsule.
Right, with the title of creative director.
Yeah, creative director. Yeah. CEO and founder.
Exactly.
Oh my God, those are so funny. Because I was going to say, that was the one thing that like everyone had to have one, because that was the only way you could get in to Capsule at the time, is you had to prove that you were a business owner. And so the loophole was just make your own business card. Hence why everyone was like, oh, I'm the creative director of, you know, start with typewriters or Sartorially Inclined or the Bengal stripe or, you know, whatever that was. But anyway, sorry, Rob, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, and I definitely want to talk about how it seems like there's this kind of like wing of menswear conversation that's increasingly driven by people who started out as like content creators on Tumblr or, you know, blogs. And that story just kind of highlights kind of that aspect of, it's like, you know, you're sort of one person in an industry that doesn't, you know, was maybe slower to recognize the influence or the importance of like individual viewpoints. So that story to me is just like, how do you kind of put on that, you know, look of being more professional than perhaps it may have been like on a day-to-day basis. I also think Capsule would probably just be really happy that people would show up at this point.
Well, yeah, I was going to say. But what, like, because Nico, how old were you when you first started that?
So that was probably halfway through college. I was like, you know, 20, maybe 21 at the latest. But I definitely had no idea what I was talking about. Just, you know, I was reading other blogs and then kind of riffing on that, giving my own take on what I was interested in at the time, which, you know, was like the sort of take Ivy renaissance of trad style and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think I kind of was maybe one of the first Tumblr blogs to really start posting stuff like that. And that's why I had such a strong following at the time. And sort of connected with you and Lawrence and all those people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you also had good taste. I mean, I think that's the thing, is that there were a lot of blogs at that time. And I remember everyone was calling you out because, yeah, I mean, you had good taste. Like there was a good mixture of, and I don't know if this was like the J.J. Jound effect or whatever, but I think at the time when everyone was starting to write about like clothes and be like, Michael Bastian is the god, you know, you started, I think, incorporating things like architecture or a picture or an album, you know, in like building that world. And, you know, young or old or whatever, I think it was also cool to have that stuff on the internet, because everyone wasn't the same age, but on the internet we all were.
Yeah, for sure. I think what made people like, or like, you know, brands like Michael Bastian's brand so interesting was sort of the cultural references he was taking from, and, you know, whether it's actors or movies or certain aspects of, you know, American culture that really resonated with me. And I thought, why not? I don't know. I wasn't thinking too deeply about it, but on Tumblr, you can just post whatever you want, whenever you want. And I was like, well,
ask
I really
me anything.
Like this album. I want to share this with the world. So why not post it? And I guess, yeah, that obviously resonated with a lot of people.
Well, because where are you from originally? You were from New York proper, right? No?
Yeah, I'm from a small town called Bedford. It's where Ralph Lauren's country estate is. Martha Stewart has a house there. It's
have
sort of that kind of lifestyle. I have not. I think there's like, you know, security guards and that sort of thing. But
okay, touche.
It's beautiful. I mean, you can see it from the street too. But I grew up around a lot of that kind of stuff, and you know, my mom taking me to the city to go to museums and art galleries. So that probably informed a little bit of my taste. And then my cultural background, I'm half Indian, half Mexican. So that probably also, like, growing up had some influence on my taste, seeing things from like a little bit of a different perspective than everyone else I was growing up with. I definitely paid more attention to what I was wearing to fit in, or, you know, make some kind of statement about my interests and sort of showing people that there was more to me than whatever you see. I guess I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but...
No, I know what you mean. I mean, that's a very natural thing. I think it nowadays people are calling it out more as it's more significant, but like since, you know, the dawn of time, like every single person has tried to find a way to fit in with the people that they wanted to associate themselves with, you know? So, I mean, whatever that was, whether it was clothes or, you know, livestock or, you know, I mean, getting super archaic, right? I mean, just, or the title that you had, it was a fine, you were trying to find a way to like be as one. And so, I mean, that's, I think nowadays people are like, oh, that's, you know, there's more of an empathetic relationship of people who come from backgrounds that are existing in worlds that, you know, were not historically as welcoming to them. Like, I don't know how to say this in like the most honest PC way, but it's like, you know, it sucks being the minority in whatever, you know, whatever it is. And so a lot of times people attach themselves to the cultural identities to move forward.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, going into middle school and high school and developing a taste in music, I gravitated towards the punk scene. Maybe not like hardcore. I wasn't like, you know, Brian or from Wooden Sleepers or Chris Black. I wasn't like at that level. But Brian and I have actually talked about, you know, a lot of like Long Island post-hardcore sort of emo bands that we definitely had the same taste in.
What were the bands you were listening to?
Mostly Long Island stuff, like Glassjaw and Taking Back Sunday, Brand New. I think a couple of those have been canceled since because of things that have come out after the fact. But
Brand New has had a couple issues there, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not something I still listen to, but that definitely informed my... my self-identity and like figuring out my place in the world and what I was interested in. Definitely started paying a lot more attention to what I was wearing to reflect my interests around that time. And that was also around the same time I got into message boards, and I was on message boards for video games, graphic design, everything I was interested in. And somehow along the lines, it got to talking about clothing on those message boards. Someone told me about Super Future. They told me about Style Forum, told me about like Helmut Lang and Dior. And that was really my entry point into fashion blogging, I guess, eventually.
What was the first message board you were in?
It was like a Final Fantasy message board, honestly. It's kind of
sweet,
kind of embarrassing. But
go on.
Yeah.
Which one? Just like all of them? Or was this like Cloud Base 7?
I honestly don't remember. It definitely doesn't exist anymore. But it was like a small niche one. And yeah, I was just looking for like probably some kind of user guide to like get past a certain point in the game, and stumbled upon this and started talking to people. Yeah, so I started on that, ended up in Super Future, and that was where I met a couple other people who are still kind of in the scene, like Scott Mertzopoulos. And he invited me to like this house party one year for New Year's, and I got a little too drunk. You know, I was like fresh out of college and blacked out. And then the next day, there's all these people hitting me up on the internet, like, so great to meet you. And
oh, shit. Okay. So you made a bunch of friends.
Made a bunch of friends without really knowing it. And yeah, that was my first kind of like from the internet to in person, converting those relationships and developing a little more stronger friendships with people, which was fun.
And this was like mid 2000s, like that era?
This was probably like 2008, 2009.
Oh, okay.
And then shortly after that, I met Lawrence Schlossman, who, I mean, you know, throwing fits. He really was kind of like a spirit guide in the world, because he just had a certain level of self-confidence that I didn't have. And he just had the ability to just say whatever was on his mind whenever he wanted and get away with it. And that was pretty inspiring. He, along the same time that I met Jeremy at Capsule, actually got me an internship with BPMW, who he had just got hired for, and they're the ones who put on the Capsule trade show. And so
Lawrence did, right?
Yeah, so I was working with Lawrence for a few months until he jumped ship to Park and Bond. And
oh my god.
Yeah,
Park, I jumped ship and Bond. Wait, can you very quickly explain what Park and Bond was?
From my recollection, it was an offshoot of Guilt Group, who do those kind of discounted sales for brands. And they created a specialty website. They hired a lot of, you know, big names from the industry, at least for me at the time.
Nick Wooster, Tyler Thorson of MidnightStyle.com. And because it was Guilt Man first, right? Because Guilt, then they had Guilt Man, and then that evolved into Park and Bond. And Park and Bond was the full price, high end retail experience. Yeah, and Lawrence was on there. And it's interesting because to kind of, sorry to like interrupt, but like the bigger thing that like Rob was talking about too is you kind of had all these like friends helping out friends thing, right? I mean, not that you didn't deserve or earn any of the thing. Let me be explicit as possible on that. I don't think that people give people jobs that suck at it, but there is an aspect of, well, Rob's shaking his head, but like there was an aspect there of you know, you're helping out your friends, and you want to, like, there was definitely more of a team mentality where it's like, oh, I'm jumping over here, who of the homies can I bring with me?
Yeah, for sure. So Lawrence had actually jumped ship, and then he assisted on the photo shoot for Ovadia and Sons.
Whoa! Which we got to talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, which Justin Chung was also shooting. So both of them were like, oh yeah, Nico's a homie. Like, he's great. You guys should hire him. So that's how I ended up with my first full-time job in the industry. And it was amazing. You know, it was a dream to like go in for the interview, and I go into their showroom and there's just racks full of double-breasted sport coats and, you know, club collar shirts and whatever, you know, trousers with the side taps, which was amazing to see in person for the first time. And yeah, that was the dream. And somewhere along the way, it got a little diluted. And I ended up, you know, 5 years down the line, jumping ship again and coming to Grail.
Wait, hold on. Okay, because you weren't at Park and Bond for 5 years. Because I feel like Park and Bond lasted for like 1 year. And then they were just like, erase.
I wasn't at Park and Bond. Lawrence went to Park and Bond. He got me the job at Ovadia.
Okay.
So, yeah.
By this time, you're living in New York City, it sounds like.
No, I was actually still.
Oh, you're commuting?
In Bedford, commuting every
with
day
Ralph? With Ralph
train.
Lauren?
Yeah, in his private jet or a helicopter or whatever.
I actually saw Doug Bill Mayer from RRL on that train a couple of times. So, yeah.
Wait, so you're doing the commuter, but, you know, making it happen in the city kind of thing.
Yeah. And I remember around the same time, Aaron Levine posted something on his Instagram. Aaron from, I think he was at that time, maybe
he's
at
Rogues
Monica.
Gallery. Yeah. And then club. Yeah.
Yeah. He posted something that he was, you know, on the same train as me. Like, he didn't post about me, that I was like, oh, I take that same train. And that's how I kind of like started talking to him. And it was great to talk to someone who, like, you know, I was following him when he was at Rogues Gallery. And that was like, looking at those lookbooks, the styling was just amazing. Another Tumblr blogger at the time who was also a photographer, Sean Sullivan, was in their lookbooks. That's how I met Chris Black, was through Sean Sullivan.
Oh my God. What was Sean?
And Jake
was
Davis.
It was the Impossible Cool?
Impossible Cool, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh man, I remember that. Is he, what's he up to?
Dude, I don't know. I haven't seen anything from him since those times. But
wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you were like getting ingratiated with all the homies. Then you go into Ovadia, and Ovadia was interesting because that was like a super hot like brand for a while, and they were great designers, Ariel and Shimon, but like I feel like, and I, you know, and obviously this is all like behind the scenes sort of paywall thing, but I feel like it was your testimony about shit that was going on there that brought to light some of the craziness that was happening at Ovadia. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, when you enter a sphere like that, that's, you know, so hard to break into in the first place, and you're finally in it, you can kind of let things slide if it's like, you know, you expect that, you know, it's going to be a lot of hard work and there's going to be long hours and you really have to grind to get to that place. But seeing the sort of parallels of a lot of stories of other people I was working with, I kind of realized, you know, a lot of these people are quitting or getting fired after 3 or 6 months. And how am I the only person who's kind of sheltered from this? I started to realize that I was definitely getting preferential treatment, but I felt really guilty about that. And I realized that a lot of the other people that I was working with were being held to like sort of impossible standards. And I think in the industry, there's already such a pressure to stand out as a brand and really make accommodations for the stores you're working with and the partners you're working with, to kind of like, everyone's kind of bending over backwards all the time and everything needs to be done yesterday. And This wasn't unique to Ovadia, but it was something I realized that was an environment that was unhealthy and I didn't want to be a part of anymore. So I tried to, you know, gracefully bow out of that. And in doing so, they sort of took offense to maybe the way I did it. I'm not sure.
How did you do it?
I don't remember how things soured, but I just kind of told them, you know, I gave them my 2 weeks and they asked for me to like kind of tie up any loose ends, which I was happy to do. And they're like, by the way, you know, they kind of just like made some sly remark on one of the emails. They were like, did you get your mom to write this resignation letter?
Oh, mama.
Also,
whoa,
like,
dude.
Just
holy
kinda, like,
shit.
gently told me that, like, you know, they had like lawyers ready to go if I was gonna try anything. Dude. And I was like, dude, I've worked for you for 5 years. Like, we were friends, or like friendly before this. And that was kind of like what opened my eyes to the fact that this was all just business to them and they didn't really think of me the way I thought they did. And so I just let it all spill in Glassdoor. I just, you know, all the times things kind of cross the line with anyone, I was, you know, more than happy to share that, because it didn't need to be brought to light, not just with them, but like within the industry. I think this is just kind of commonplace, unfortunately.
Want to hear the rest? Join us over on Patreon. You'll hear this episode in tons more exclusive pods, from the return of Sid Mashburn. I mean, the return of everyone, but you get more Rob and Jeremy conversations. You get Rob and me with other guests. It's just a chock full of pods. But you also get access to our private members-only Slack group, where we chat about menswear and everything else. So visit patreon.com/blammo, and we'll see you there.